Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Merle Exit. It is cold out tonight. Well, not that it's not cold in much of the United States, but fortunately I'm all blanketed up even in my house, all cuddled up to do this radio show. And we're going to be focusing on jazz, but you know, there's always that first commercial, and it's our sponsor. So, get yourself hungry for this one.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy tale brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
And you can get these most delicious brownies by going to www.brownies.com. But now we're going to go right to our guests. You're all on right now. Look at that.
That's right.
Hello. How are you?
All right.
Hello.
So let's begin with Malika, because you're the person who's at Flushing Town Hall and can tell us about it.
Sure. Flushing Town Hall is the building, but we are actually Flushing Council on Culture and the Arts. And we are a creative catalyst in the community. We've been here for almost 35 years. March will be our 35th year anniversary. And we offer the community an affordable way to take in the arts, to take in music for all ages and all stages without having to break the bank.
So let's tell us about some of the things that are like, when you say, what kind of things that go on before we get into this whole, the whole jazz scene.
Well, I mean, if you're looking to learn how to do Korean mask making, you can come to Flushing Town Hall. If you are looking to take in some live music, live jazz performances, you can come to Flushing Town Hall. If you're looking to really, like, explore your world music culture base, you can come to Flushing Town Hall. So we really have a little bit of everything to offer people. We have poems, we have jazz jams and clinics for up-and-coming artists or people that are already established. We do a little bit of everything. I think one of the things that we are trying to change the perception of Flushing Town Hall is the fact that we're not just a place to take in jazz. We offer music from around the globe. So we do have family programming. We have poetry, we have visual art, we have, you know, we have a little bit of something for everyone. So those are the things that we really want to drive home. And we have a great staff on board that's committed to really going out into the community and cultivating new talent to bring into Flushing Town Hall. So people like Clyde Bullard, who's on the phone with us now, is our jazz producer. And one of Clyde's roles with us, he's a music aficionado. He has many, many years in the music industry. He's worked with jazz legends. He's worked with R&B legends, you name it, and he's probably had some connection with them. And he's really committed to cultivating that talent and reaching out to those people and bringing them in to Flushing Town Hall. So, you know, we rely on people like Clyde and our executive director, Ellen Kodadek, to go out and bring us back great talent that everyone would be interested in. So people like Barbara Rosine, who has a performance coming up at Flushing Town Hall, we have a poem mobile that's coming up next month that will actually have poems being shown on the side of the building from various Korean poets. So, you know, what we strive to do is really tap into the community resources, look for programs and exhibitions and things that our community would find interesting, and bring them right to their own backyard.
Well, that's really great. And by the way, before we just get into the jazz, there's also coming up regarding Lunar New Year. Can you just kind of briefly tell us about that?
Correct. So our Lunar New Year program will commence on January 31st, which is actually Lunar New Year itself. And that performance will be Young Joo-sung Quartet. And all of our programs will run into February for Lunar New Year. So we have family programs. We have live jazz. We have mask making. We have a folk art exhibition. We have a tribute to gamin, which is a wind and stone instrument celebration. We have a calligraphy workshop. We have a dance sampler, and we have our poem mobile. So you really have a really diverse and huge lineup of programs all celebrating our Lunar New Year.
That's great. And I understand now Clyde is kind of responsible for, producing the jazz in.
Yeah, and I'll let Clyde jump in here. I won't steal his shine, but Clyde will explain to you more about what he does at Flushing Town Hall.
Yeah, hi, Clyde. How you doing?
Are you? Everything's wonderful.
Great. Yeah,
yeah,
tell us. I want you to tell us about, before you go into this thing, the jazz trail.
Okay. You want me to talk about the Queens Jazz Trail?
Yeah, tell us about the, yeah.
Okay, the Queens Jazz Trail Tour was a tour that was initiated, and it is owned by Flushing Town Hall. What it speaks and has been doing is illuminating and taking people on the various areas of Queens where jazz icons live. Many people don't realize that in the borough of Queens, in various locations, there have been more jazz luminaries that have made major contributions to jazz than anywhere else on the planet. They've all migrated and lived in Queens, in Jamaica, in Corona, Addis Lake Park, all over. So the Queens Jazz Trail Tour, on a bus, and as a walking tour, would take people to some of the locations where these great people live, like Dizzy Gillespie, Louis Armstrong, Fats Waller, Mercer Ellington, and so forth and so on. One of the great stops of the museum would be to visit the Louis Armstrong House and Museum. We could see where Louis Armstrong actually lived, because the house is kept in the same way it was when he lived there.
That was a major point for Flushing Town Hall.
It actually won an award in 2004 as being the best jazz tour in New York City, and I presided and ran that tour for 7 years.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to know. Well, we have something here on the map. Manhattan doesn't have it all.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Okay. So Clyde, tell us about, what's this whole thing with your producing the jazz there, and how did this all begin?
Well, it all began. The actual Jazz Life series was incepted, and it began with the original founder of Flushing Town Hall, Joanne Jones, Kobe Narita, and my father, C.B. Bullard, who was an executive at Atlantic Records. He was there, 19 years. They actually began the series, okay, because they felt that, she felt that Queens needed to have more jazz, being it was a borough that had so many luminaries in the past. I came in after my father had passed. He died in 1997, and he needed a producer. And I was always kind of a secret consultant to Flushing Town Hall, so Joanne Jones had offered me the job. So what I'm doing and what I've done is pretty much they planted a tree, meaning my father, Kobe Narita, and Joanne Jones. They planted a tree. I came on board and put more water and fertilizer, and it sprouted strong and branches. And so what we're doing, all of us now, are just hanging things, branches or tree that they actually began. But what we have done, all of us, we have brought world-class jazz artists to Flushing Town Hall. The same people that you see performing at Flushing Town Hall are the same people that you will see performing at the Iridium, at Lincoln Center, at the Village Vanguard. The jazz community is a very small one, especially with the very visible jazz artists who are famous. And so it's the same artists that are playing at all the clubs in New York and at all the venues in the world. So what that means is, even if you don't know who's performing there by name, if you pay and buy a ticket, you're guaranteed you're going to get a world-class professional and a pleasing performance of any artist that you pay to see there.
Do you perform as well?
I have performed there many times. Some of the artists that I've actually worked with there have asked me to play bass. I'm a professional bassist, and I've actually played with them. Dave Valentin, I did some stuff with him there. I played with the World of Brazil, people from Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo. So, yeah, I do play there.
And would we see you playing at the Flushing Town Hall?
Sometimes. I try when I'm producing something or organizing something, I don't make it mandatory that someone hires me to play for them or with them, but if they ask me to, sure, I would do it. And in many instances, the groups that we bring in, they have their own group. They have their own members that have been together for years, and I'd rather keep it that way. That way it's more cohesive.
Are you also handling, I saw this thing with like, looks like each month, like students can come in and jam?
Yes, that's my jazz jamming clinic.
And who organized this? Is it also Clyde, or is this you, Malika, that did it?
That's more the Queen's Jazz Overground. That's an organization that Flushing Town Hall has adopted, and they use Town Hall as the building, Town Hall, as a place to sometimes perform. They have their own jazz festival coming up. So the members of the Queen's Jazz Overground, right? Overground.
Yes, Queen's Jazz Overground.
Right. Brian Woodruff is a good friend of mine, and he kind of was one of the, organizers of that organization. And their organization is to illuminate the musicians that reside in Queens. There are a lot of great musicians in Queens still, and they're not getting enough exposure and attention, so Town Hall is helping them to get more exposure and attention.
So when I see that, it's like it says students. Are we getting like music majors from Queens College or things like that coming in too?
We get people from all over. If you are a student of music, that doesn't necessarily mean that you, you go to a classroom setting. You're just someone that has taken the time to develop a love and a passion for music. So that can be a retired jazz musician. That can be a student from Queens College or St. John's or, you know, from York College. It can be, you know, someone in high school that plays in the band that loves music and loves instruments. So we welcome everyone, regardless of whether you are a matriculated student or just someone that has dedicated their life and their time into loving music.
So it doesn't have to necessarily be people that reside in Queens?
No, you can come from anywhere.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Our programs are open to anyone from anywhere.
Okay. I was just kind of wondering about that because it's a little more another jazz kind of thing. Aside from the regular live performances that you're doing. Now, before we go into who do you want to? I don't know. I have some extra phone numbers calling in on here.
Wow.
So
I'm not sure. Okay.
Is Barbara on the line?
Well, I'm
here.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We have Alex Blake on the line and Barbara Rosine.
Hi, how are you?
For those who don't know, Alex Blake is one of the most phenomenal acoustic and electric bass players in the world. His resume of all the great people he played with is astonishing. Tell us about some of the people you play with, Alex.
Well, I've worked with people from starting in the beginning in Latin. It was people like Marietta, so many people I can't even think. But anyway, it's like a Dizzy Gillespie. I've worked with Clark Terry. I've worked with Patti LaBelle. I've worked with Manhattan Transfer. I've worked with it's so many people. Celia Cruz, Machito. Okay. I work with Campbell.
Baguette.
I work with just a lot of different people. So many people: Billy Cobham, Lenny White, Harry Belafonte, Santana. It's a very, very long list of people that I.
Randy Weston.
With. Randy Weston, who I currently work with as well. So it's as I said, it's a very, very long list. I started playing very, very early. Started playing professionally when I was 12. So I was playing with people like Machito, Isaiah Cruz, Tito Puente, Eddie Palmieri, Charlie Palmieri, and then about 16 years old, I started working with Dizzy Gillespie, and I worked with people with Sweet Inspirations. I played with people at the Apollo, a lot of different bands at the Apollo, and I've done so many different things, in terms.
And what are your ethnic roots?
My ethnic roots, I am from Panama.
Yes, I
am from Panama. My family's from Panama. I came to the United States when I was about 7 years old. This is 1958 that I came to the United States. So my roots are based, it's Latin, African, so on and so on. And my family, again, the whole family's from Panama and Costa Rica. And so it's a mixture of Jamaica as well. So
yeah, maybe that's why you have such a natural affinity for playing the Latin music.
Well, yeah, I grew up with it. It was something, in Panama, one of the great things about Panama is that you have so many people coming through the country. Based on the canal, you've had so many people coming through. And so you have a lot of different cultures that stop in Panama. And so it's like a cultural icon of music where you have a lot of different music. The main music is Latin. And then you have the ethnic music of the people, the Indians, and then you have the Africans,
right,
and so on and so on. So you have this mixture of people. It's right in the center of everything. So you have this mixture of people. So you have all of this different music. And so basically, for me coming up, I heard all of this different music from reggae to Latin to calypso to the natural music of the people there, the native people of Panama, who are the Indians.
Right.
So you had all this different mixture of music, and I heard all of that coming up. And my father, who's a very well-known trombone player down there at the time, played with a lot of the major bands with a guy named Victor Boyle, who was like the Duke Ellington of Panama.
Right.
And so, I would go and hang out with my dad and hear all this big band music from that cats were playing from the States, and plus music that was written for some of the guys in Panama, because they would generally travel all over South America.
But how did you start playing bass the way that you do? Because you play bass totally uniquely, different than any other bassist I've seen in the world. Alex Blake plays the acoustic bass like a guitar. He's actually strumming chords.
Wow.
And from what I've heard directly from people in Kukuri's group, that the great bassist Stanley Clark was actually influenced by Alex Blake and has amalgamated some of Alex's techniques into his own technique that he uses.
Well,
how do you stop playing bass like that? I mean, that's kind of weird to be strumming chords.
Well, the funny thing is, I would have to say it's my dad. When I started playing, I really didn't want to play bass. In fact, I hated the bass. And my dad, came home one day with a bass, and he said, "You're going to play this." And I kind of looked at it like it wasn't what I wanted to play. I was sort of playing guitar a little bit earlier, and I really wanted to get into playing guitar. But my dad was like, "You're going to play this instrument because this instrument is going to take you all over the world, blah blah blah." And I was like, "Yeah, right." And
he was right.
He was right. He had a whole thing.
From Japan. He was in Japan yesterday.
I just got back yesterday. But he had this whole thing about.
Let me ask you a question. An important question.
Uh huh.
Do the contemporary bassists of today, bass players of today, like Ron Carter, Christian McBride,
right,
Harvey S., Are they aware of you, and do they respect your work?
Yes. Yeah. We, you know, we all know each other. I mean, I know all of these bases. Ron and Richard Davis, I think Christian and those cats, they've come much, much later. But a lot of the older cats know who I am. I mean, they've known me since I was very, very young because they saw me playing with people like Dizzy and Clark Terry and many other, McCoy Tyner, Freddie Hubbard. So all these guys, they saw me. People
what about Jaco Pastorius? Jaco Pastorius?
Yes,
ever?
Yes. I knew Jaco as well when Jaco first came on the scene.
Jaco's a great bass player for Weatherport.
Right. I knew Jaco. I knew Stanley. Stanley and I were the two young bass players back in the 70s. We were like the two main cats, I would say, of the young bass players who were sort of exploring the bass maybe a little differently than some of our counterparts.
Moving away from the traditional language.
Huh?
Moving away from the traditional bass
language.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, we were sort of, we had our own concepts, and Stanley's a great bassist as well. But we had our own concepts of how we were approaching the bass a little bit differently. So I would say in the 70s, we were sort of like the two top young basses. And there were a couple of others, Ralph Armstrong and a couple of other cats, for that period, because the music at that particular time was in a whole new evolutionary period. I mean, the music was totally changing. We were mixing rock and Latin and this, and all of it was fine.
And they dubbed it fusion. They started calling it fusion.
And they started calling it fusion because the record companies didn't know what to call it. They didn't know how to label it. So the label that came out was fusion. So you had people like Chick Corea's band. You had Billy Cobham, who I work with. You had Gene LaPonte, Mahavishnu. You had all these different groups coming out of that period of time, which in terms of the music that they were experimenting with, this is what it's come about to what we have today, So there were a lot of great people at that particular time, and I'm very, very glad to have been a part of that and still a part of it today,
Yes, I'm here.
You there?
Yeah. Let me ask Merle. You're going to be performing at Flushing Town Hall, right?
Yes, I am. Yes, tomorrow. Friday, the 24th, I'll be performing at Flushing Town Hall. Yes.
And what do you? I'm assuming it's not the first time you've been here. Been there? Is it?
No. That's just
What is it that you like about the place, about the venue?
Well, it's. I think it's a great venue for musicians. I like the fact that they are open to the arts because today. The arts are being attacked in so many different ways, and this is a great venue where young kids, elderly, middle age, everyone has the opportunity to come and to be involved in some form of the arts. And Flushing Town Hall, it's not only a place for you to go in here and hear music, but it's a place where you have so many people can express themselves artistically. And it's a place where so many can come to learn as well, because I think their function is more than just showcasing artists. Their function is to help artists and to teach artists as well. So I've always enjoyed playing there as well, but I enjoy the fact that what their function is about, because the arts today is being. When I say attacked in so many, what I'm basically saying is, in so many countries that you go to, art is the number one thing that you find in all the schools, no matter how poor the country, no matter how rich the country. This is the only country where art seems to be the first thing to go. When you were coming up in school, I mean, I would say I don't know how old everybody is, but I know I'm a little older, but when you were coming up in school, when I came to this country, art was the number one thing. I mean, you either had art, you had music, you had woodshop, you had metal, you had this, you had all the different functions that someone could work with their hands or their mind. You're working with your mind and your hands, but you were able to express yourself It gave you something to express yourself. If you weren't good in music, you were good in this. If you weren't good in that, you were good in this, in some part of the artistic field. Now, all of that has been taken away, and there are very few places that give that. And to me, I think Flushing Town Hall is one of the very few places that offers that particular type of thing for people. Because I think the young kids today, it's something that's missing from the schools that will give them some sort of character, or maybe I'm using the wrong word, but give them something. Because they have to find their talents somewhere else. It's not in the schools anymore. So when you have a place like Flushing Town Hall where there's a possibility of a lot of these kids going someplace and finding a talent that they might have or someone there that can teach them something, I think it's something great. And so Flushing Town Hall, I think it's a great place. I've performed there several times, and I love performing there.
Hey, and you love getting a chance to talk to me too, don't you?
Yes.
You know, by the way, I was checking, because I got an email from the Queens Museum, and I was, like, looking to see, and it looks like they're doing some performing as well as art as well, I guess, which is nice because it's an extra venue in Queens that, you know, the kids can go to and, you know, and that kind of stuff.
I think basically any place that is now giving the opportunity to kids to be able to find their talents, I think it's great. And Flushing Town Hall and whatever other places that people can go to and express themselves, I think it's a great thing because I think for the younger generation coming up, as I said, for us, the younger generation at a particular time, at the time period, you could always get this in school. It was something that was there for you.
Yeah.
It's not there anymore. You know, the political situation is not to give or it's to take everything away. So the arts are the number one thing that's been taken away. So whatever facility or places that can offer, especially the young kids, because the younger ones are the ones that are the people of tomorrow. And if there's some way that they can have something to express themselves other than expressing themselves sometimes in a negative way that they've had to express themselves, and this is something positive that can work for them, I think it's great. Yeah.
That's good. By the way, I'm in my 60s, and when I went to school, everybody had to have music appreciation.
Right, exactly.
And till this day, I can tell the difference. Because of that, I could tell the difference listening to an orchestra of whether it's an oboe or an English horn.
I'll be honest. I'm not sure how old Barbara is, but I may be the youngest person on this call. I'm in my very early 30s.
All right. So
music education wasn't big for me when I was in school. I'm a product of the public school system. Grew up in Brooklyn. The music that I love and enjoy, I learned because I grew up with my grandmother, and music was a tie that binded us. So, you know, Saturday mornings cleaning the house, I remember her having on, you know, old school music, Roberta Flack, you know, the OJs and things like that. So because of that, I grew a fond appreciation for what for me is now what I consider old school music. So once you talk about removing some of the arts from the classroom setting, where children that are growing up today going to get that? So that's why, you know, you have organizations like Flushing Town Hall where the parents can come and enjoy music that they're familiar with, and now the kids can be exposed to music that they otherwise may not be exposed to. And I think, you know, you have a lot of musicians and artists that are coming forward and speaking about the value of music and the value of the arts in the life and upbringing of a child. And that's why we're really thankful to have people like Alex Blake, you know, like Clyde, like Barbara, who are able to keep that growing and keep that going for us at Flushing Town Hall.
Well, there's nothing better than having kids at a performance and having kids get up and bop around and dig the music and look at the,
right.
the music.
I hear a new voice.
And the horn. Yeah,
that's
I mean, I love when kids come. It's the best. So
yeah.
I hope we get some kids when I'm there. I just, you know, that's what
is
it's
that
all
Barbara?
About. That's
yes.
me.
Okay.
Hi, everybody.
Say hello to everybody first. As a matter of fact, Barbara, introduce yourself and tell us about you.
Well, let's see. I'm going to be at the Flushing Town Hall on the 21st. And actually, Flushing Town Hall is where I first met Clyde because I was performing with Wycliffe Gordon there.
Right.
That was actually a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago. And since then, Clyde and I have done a lot, and he's come and heard me at Birdland. And he's right. People that come to Flushing Town Hall have gigs all over the world and at all the best clubs. And it's just it's almost, you know, years ago when you'd be on the circuit. You know, to me now I think of Flushing Town Hall as another great venue for me to do. And I'm thrilled to have it.
And I was told by Wycliffe Gordon.
Tell us what you do.
I was told
oh,
by Wycliffe Gordon that you were one of the greatest protagonists of 1920s, 30s, and 40s music. Why do you love that music of that era?
Well, I mean, for me, I'm a real history buff anyway. And you know, as Malika was saying, I mean, I had the same experience as a child with my parents and grandparents listening to old music, and I felt a connection with them and that music. I wasn't rebellious. I embraced it. And then I started to sing as a big band vocalist even in college. I started to sing professionally at 18, but that was more, you know, like a ghost-type band of the big band eras. And then when I moved to New York, I wanted to know what had come before that. And I got really immersed in, well, what did Ella Fitzgerald listen to? What did Billie Holiday listen to? Where did they come from? And
right.
that started to really interest me. You know, just the fact that there was a singer named Monette Moore who did some great double entendre music back in the day, and that's the first person that Billy subbed for in 1932.
Wow.
You know, that kind of thing. And who ever hears the recordings of Monette Moore or Virginia Liston or some of these really early people? So I thought that needed to be represented a little bit, and that's what I do a lot of. I also tour with the Harry James Orchestra still.
So. I also understand that some of the members in your band actually play for Woody Allen, and that you
well,
work,
yeah.
actually work.
Well, Connell Oakes, my pianist, is Woody's pianist, and he won a Grammy last year for Midnight in Paris.
Wow.
He's also on the soundtrack for Blue Jasmine this year. He plays every Monday at the Carlisle with Woody. He tours with Woody. And when I can get him, he's my first call, and we've been together since, boy, I think 2000, when we first did an album with Vince Giordano and the Nighthawks together.
Right.
So. He's, you know, he's part of the A-team now. You know, he's out there. And Andy Stein is coming with me, and he was on a Prairie Home Companion for years as their violinist.
Wow.
So it's, you know, it's not they're not pikers. They're definitely, they're really in the know. It'll be really fun to see Connell and Andy. And then I have
now,
Pete Martinez.
And what's the name of your show at Flushing Town Hall?
What is the name of my show, Clyde? I think it's called The Jazz Age, the Charleston.
The
yes,
jazz
it's
age.
Called The Jazz Age.
Music of the 1920s, speakeasy, the Charleston, the Jazz Age, right.
Right. So we're going to, you know, we're going to have that kind of a feel to it, which I think is, you know, to me it's really happy music. It's a very happy era, and I like that optimism. So we'll do
How's
a lot of...
How are the acoustics there?
How are the acoustics where we're performing, Clyde?
The acoustics are great. You're going to be in the gallery because the theater upstairs is being renovated, so you're going to be in the gallery where it all began. The whole jazz live series began downstairs in the gallery, so it's very intimate. We used to call it intimate jazz because the artists are very close to the audience. You could see everything, you could hear everything, and some people even like that better in a different way because they're more
I like
intimate.
It better.
Yeah, it's a great
yeah.
room.
It's yeah, nice. It's cool. Yeah, yeah. So anywhere at Town Hall, it's good acoustics.
Just to show you how long it's been since I've been at Town Hall, I don't remember a theater. All I remember is the gallery.
Wow.
Oh, good. Then you'll be very comfortable
at my
show, Merle.
That means we have
Merle.
To have you back there once we reopen our theater area and give you a tour, Merle.
Oh, okay. I'll have to do that. And by the way, I have to tell you, I had a flashback of, in the 60s, going to Greenwich Village as a teenager, and it was the time of the Beatniks.
Sure.
And I went to, I was with
many,
a friend.
Many roots.
We went to Cafe Wah, which is still around.
Still there.
And if, wow. And if you went there, I think it was like, if you went there like on a Saturday, there was no cover charge, you could sit there, you can listen, you have coffee, you have popcorn, and they had these up-and-coming entertainers. And there was this up-and-coming guy.
And you saw Bob Dylan, right?
No. Richie Havens.
Oof. Wow. Probably virtually unknown then.
Yes, and I remember that because as the years went by, when I heard his name, I would call my friends and go, didn't we see this guy, Richie Havens?
Right. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Sure.
And I also got to see UB Blake perform.
Oh,
where?
Wow.
Where?
This was in the 70s, and the Brooklyn Academy of Music was having some, I think, 100th anniversary or something like that. And there was this, and this was on Channel 13. You had to bid for it. They did it on an auction. And for some reason or other, and I don't know why, I was determined, I wanted to see UB Blake.
That's so cool that you knew.
Yes. And I said, now you got to think of it at that time in the 70s. I shelled out $250 for two tickets.
Oh,
wow.
My gosh.
Well, you know, on Broadway, they had to play entitled UB on Broadway.
Sure.
That whole play about his music.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even.
Definitely saw a legend. That's
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I wanted to see him, because he was such a legend. And yeah. I had heard, the music, and I said, I got to see this guy play the piano. That was because that's my thing is the piano. I mean, I was like in love with Liberace. Watched his TV program all day.
I had the same thing with Earl Hines. My parents took me to see Earl Hines when I was in junior high. I mean, it was really right before he passed away. And I mean, my gosh, what an experience. And, I mean, talk about, the $250 you spent on those tickets is worth about the stories that you've told about it. Yeah.
And I don't remember anything else about the event at all. except you be playing the piano. I don't even remember who I went with.
Well, some performance, that's for sure.
So, but this is so good, to have this, well, it's good to have this kind of music. There's also not enough venues in Queens because there are no nightclubs. It's not like you can go to a jazz nightclub, in Queens. And basically, when you're dealing with the entertainment, you're going to, either one of two colleges or Queens Theater in the Park. But, so I guess this is a little kind of more intimate.
Mm-hmm. Definitely an intimate experience. And we have events in... Well, when our theater reopens, that's a bigger space that can hold about 250 people. And then we have performances in our gallery. So, we do offer that intimate feel, but I think you're right. When people think about jazz music, they think of places like Blue Note in the city, but they don't realize that you don't even have to travel that far because, there are places like Flushing Town Hall that have that offer that on a weekly basis.
That's right. Yeah.
How about the parking?
We do have a parking lot in the back of our building. It's first come, first serve. It's not big, but we do offer parking to guests.
Oh, okay. So that's good. And, if you happen to get there, in other words, get your ass there as quick as you can. And as far as like when you're getting tickets, are they general admission tickets though?
Yeah, they're general admission tickets. You can purchase your tickets online at flushingtownhall.org. You can come in any day of the week and buy tickets from our box office staff. So yeah, there's many ways to get tickets, and they're always available.
But then with the gallery, it really doesn't matter where you sit, I imagine.
Right. When our theater reopens, you know, wherever you sit, you have great seats because we have an elevated stage.
Okay. And when the theater opens, will those be ticketed seats?
No, the seats are still general admission price.
Oh, okay.
So there's not like, you know, you pay $100 for mezzanine and $200 for it's not that way at all.
Oh, okay. And when will when do you expect the theater to be
March.
Completed? Oh, okay.
It'll be open in March. Mm-hmm.
Before the snow melts, even.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're hoping we can nix all of the snow within the next few weeks, but Mother Nature might have her own plans.
Yeah, I'm hearing about there may be problems even with the Super Bowl.
I know. I saw that today on the news.
No, wow. We just have to make sure it's clear on Friday for Alex. That's all.
That's all.
No,
right.
Great. Yeah, time.
I hope Mother Nature cooperates for Friday, you know. So that'll be cool.
But you can just so the public transportation will get you there too, right?
Number 7 train, Long Island Railroad. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And then can it's walkable, but is there a bus that goes there from the after you get off the number 7? I'm just curious.
Well, you could take the
queue. Yes, there is a bus that goes there.
Yeah, several. Yeah, but it's a quick
enough
walk.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. You can also jump in a cab. You want to jump in a cab? $6 or $7.
This is well, you could call it. Wait a minute. But there are any cabs? Or you have to call a car service?
No, you can get
do
cabs.
Do they have cabs?
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Oh, they do have cabs over there at Main Street?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Waiting,
because everyone in Queens is... In Queens, all I know is car services.
No, there are cabs everywhere in New York.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. Now, also, just to throw it out, what's the food thing there? Is it concession? Can people have, you know, is there something to eat or...
We do offer concession during all of our shows, usually around the intermission portion of the show. Guests can buy beverages. They can, you know, purchase snacks. Once our theater reopens, for many of our shows, we do offer people the opportunity to buy tables, and those tables come with a wine, cheese, snacks, meats, and things like that.
Oh, that's really cool.
So it makes for a great date night. So, you know. Have a great cheap date. Come on over to Flushing Town Hall.
Oh, good. And what the ticket prices? We didn't get into that.
Our ticket prices range from we usually do a $40 ticket once or twice a year. Most of our tickets are $15 and below.
Oh,
right. So the shows in the gallery are $15, like Alex's show and Barbara Rosine's show. Very affordable.
That's not bad at all.
And we offer many free programs. And our family programs, which start up in March as well. Well, we have our first family program on February 28th, which is our 13 Moons program. And that is no more than $10.
That's really good to know because it's a cheap date. And there's a... Well, certainly enough, if you're not going to eat there, there's certainly enough restaurants in the neighborhood.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's true, yeah.
Oh, well, that's great to hear. Well, have we missed anything? Is anything anybody want to share?
Be sure to visit us on our website, flushingtownhall.org. Check us out on Facebook. We're at Flushing Town Hall on Facebook and on Twitter to stay up to date with the latest and greatest.
Right.
How about the entertainers? Anything else you want to share?
Well,
you
want
to plug anything?
I hope to see everyone on Friday night, and hope you enjoy the performance and the performance coming after and the next one.
Right.
So,
right.
Hope to see you.
And remember that Flushing Town Hall is called the Jazz Capital of Queens.
All right.
Okay.
That's right.
And don't forget to put February 21st down.
Absolutely.
Everyone out there listening.
I'm sorry, February what?
21st.
That's your performance, Barbara, right?
Yeah, thanks, Carl. 19th,
Music, Austin, Speakeasy, The Jet.
Okay.
Thanks,
Carl. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing a performance there. That's for sure.
Okay.
And
beautiful.
I'm sure I'll be seeing plenty.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thank
you
all.
I appreciate having everybody call in and sharing all this information. I think this is cool.
All right. Wonderful.
Thank you so much, Merle.
Thank you all.
It's sports. How about that?
Bye, Alex. Wonderful. Bye, Malika. Bye, Clyde.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Merle.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
Okay. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Wow, that was really good. And I have to thank Clyde for, I definitely have to thank Clyde for conducting much of the interview, because he certainly knew what questions to ask. And again, this is, you know, Flushing Town Hall. And for those of you, if you happen to be in New York City, the thing is that if you're in Queens, it's you're not far from LaGuardia Airport. So if you're, you know, coming into Queens, if you do stay in Manhattan, you can take, it's the number 7 train that'll take you right out there to Main Street. And so it's you know, worth doing instead of spending so much money in Manhattan. But so everybody, have a great day, evening, morning, whatever it is. And I hope you're, well, I want to say I hope you're staying warm, but I think in California they would like, you know, it's really odd. It's like being in a country and there's one area that's like on a drought and hot. Out in California, and then you got Minnesota, and God knows what the temperature is below zero. Matter of fact, I'm going to call up one of my friends and see if they're alive, if they haven't frozen. So take care, everybody, and I think we'll sing the Refrigerator song. You know that one? Freeze a jolly good fellow, freeze a jolly good fellow.